Abstraction in the Lab, Science, Art, Collage and Communication. Omic Healing talks to three artists engaged in science-centered art research practices and looks at the common threads of communication in their work. The sounds of the body. It's a hot, humid day for each of the interviews I take, the coastal summer being ever present in the background, wet and sticky. The hottest year on record, again. I see Kaishan Liu at the Open Studio event First Friday, the pervasive media studio in Bristol's monthly exhibition of a curated selection of studio resident work. She has set out a table with fabrics, a book and a record now spinning, pulling each item from an intricately crafted pink box. This is 3607 Bacterial Soundscape, 2022-2023. Looking closely with a bunch of curious visitors, each surface is layered with intricate dye patterning. These are patterns made by bacteria samples grown from Kaishan's body. Silk lane across the cultivated samples of dye-producing growths. Kaishan writes that the project comes from a feeling of a loss of control of self, and searching in the microbial for a relationship with the organisms we coexist with that impact our feelings. The project's overarching form is as a soundscape expressing the multiple selves in others harbored within cavities. The process of creation, the collection, analysis and division of bacteria into known and unknown strands, as measured by whether they had been recorded before. Sounds are allocated between the two sets as they appear in the various parts of the body. It's a visually sleek, professionally assembled piece, designed to look at, and I'm glad it got the chance here as well as previously in Edinburgh and Eindhoven, since, as Kaishan tells me, the dyes of the work themselves deteriorate in light as they're shown. Its posterity, like any biological matter, only preserved for so long. While I think this an interesting way to explore the ideas, when we talk she says that, in showing the work, there's a kind of frustration that comes with having to explain it and how it was made, wanting to make something that speaks for itself. I observe a discussion between her and a visitor as they try to establish how scientifically the sounds were created, and seem disappointed with the fact that the work is a piece made by a person poetically responding to data, as if it would be more interesting if the bacteria themselves were performing the instrumentation. During this interrogation, I feel like I get what Kaishan means about not needing to explain work to people. On the other hand, seeing as she shows me the pressed silk and pattern trapped in the material of the vinyl disc, it can be useful to be given a closer look. In the studios, the sound of chattering somewhat drowns out the soundscape, so I listen to it from my laptop. When I listen at home, I am surprised by how live the two networks of sound object make each other feel. The known and unknown spectra of the body, a radio station, you tune into at the far end of the available airspace. Each track like a bubbling pot being struck with discordant tools, an internet server, an aerial picture of a city, a fire. The track sing with chittering wings and gamma shower effects, cavern-filling tones and static buzz, glorious and unsettling, overwhelming, the sheer noise of the body. I feel like I need to experience these sounds in a resonating space, a public exhibition that gives over to them the direction of the space, rather than a quest via their creator to tease out how was it done. I think the situations created by art exhibition and research art can leave people searching for an explanatory key to the work. This work, with its roots in seeking explanation and then looping back into artistic expression, I think gets to the discomfort of the impulse of seeking to scientifically explore the truth, and it being something that will loop back each time with the realization that explanation is not resolution, that the sounds themselves, the patterns on the fabrics themselves, are the speech of the body. Kaishan's recent work is as project director on Focus, But Where, an art game exploring, ambitiously, living in a world dominated by a human-altered climate, and tempered by the algorithmic and propagandized news cycles that surround this. From concept and art alone, its integration of these ideas goes beyond drawing attention to the climate, with a focus on the economies of media production, policing and technological attention that affect the actions we take. It seems fascinating, and I am really interested to see how Kaishan's practice in 3607 Bacterial Soundscape, one that has produced a beautiful, confounding creation, is reflected in something engaged directly with addressing the cynical, deadening effects of the protection of pollution, the instruments of science. Kaishan's work was supported by the Askus Lab at Summer Hall in Edinburgh, and it's there that I looked for more artworks coming out of this mix of science and art. I found, once I got to Scotland for the Glasgow International Festival of Contemporary Art, that I just missed the chance to see the work of Emma Heaslop at the ASCA-supported exhibition for Edinburgh Science Festival. From documentation online, the exhibition Mythic Instruments drew me in with the sculptural, sand-buried forms of technologies with unknown purpose and origin to me. inscribed with alchemical symbols, glass and pottery, held in cases. The displays are gorgeous. Looking at more of Emma's work, I see this clear thread of scientific historiography, alchemical and research-based projects that I am curious about the origins of. So I decide to reach out to talk Emma. We arranged to chat on the 4th of July, the day that the UK would hold its general election. Just back from the polling station, I logged in and opened our Zoom call. For the next 15 minutes, we went back and forth in a pantomime, unable to hear each other and trying to fix the problem. Eventually I got through. Emma works out of the Edinburgh Sculpture Workshop, where she conducts a research-based material practice. I asked her about the origins of the scientific process in her work, and she talks about it always having been there. I would say that it's always been how I thought. Like I've always, ever since I was really young and really into the kind of mythical nature of science, and much to my parents' displeasure, did not go into science, but did go into like the kind of exploration of, I don't know how to be eloquent about this, but like just the kind of mysteriousness of science always intrigued me, and the real close tension between fact and fiction. Everything scientific is always a theory, it's never fact. Other influences that are mentioned are Macbeth, Japanese folk tales and the lives and myths of plants, and looking for threads that draw each thing in the web of research together that then spark into life as art. I feel like there's something that I'm always kind of chasing, this like connection between things that I have never quite discovered. And I don't know if I ever do want to discover, because it might just ruin everything for me. But I'm still insatiably hunting down what this connection is, between the kind of mythical and the alchemical, and these kind of traditional knowledges with plant life and ecology, and how it all wraps together for me. The way that stories are formed from elements of science and myth is at the heart of Emma's approach to displaying reflections of science, and the sculptures and mythic instruments do have a science fiction feel to them, a reason I was drawn to them. I mentioned this to Emma, saying they'd reminded me of Dune. Well, I do love Dune, as you can tell, she laughs. I really like playing in the kind of sci-fi side of it. Or, you know, I like to think of all my work as being semi-fictional rather than being semi-truthful. I like to try and like create worlds for people to get lost in. So they're kind of transported a little bit, which is why I always lean into installation, which is never intentional but always happens. Rather than having people come in and study an exhibition as though it's a museum, I want them to walk away with something that eats at them. I ask how she got into creating the material side of the work, and how this was done first off out of a DIY passion for making that has developed over the past few years, while looking for outlets for research. So, for instance, like I felt, I was really tangled up in my head after lockdown, because I had done too long a period of research almost, and I had really like overworked to my brain. Too many things, too many strands. None of them were all very frayed. And then I went on a residency to Denmark to the Sommel. And it's like steam-powered, kind of abandoned Sommel in the middle of absolutely nowhere where I, like, didn't know what I was doing. And then I cycled around and was like just packing plants. And I just started making cordage, like just making rope of what plant. So I was coming across for ages because I didn't have anything. I didn't know what I was doing. And then one day I found this old flax museum and his working museum with 50 volunteers who averaged an age of 102. One of which spoke English, except one who spoke very broken English. I can't speak any Danish, and that just brought so much together for me, and like unpacked so many really important things for me, and brought like a lot of the research I've done, especially into Russia's and back to the forefront and back where it needed to be. The absolute best part is then when I'm in the workshop, doing material experiments is when I feel like most at home, and I always feel like I'm doing like my absolute work. But I can only do that from going through everything before and doing field research on a residency, or some kind of experience with an expert, is like the most important part. This stumbling into being in the right place at the right time for a work to emerge is very relatable to me, and I am inspired by the urge to follow interests down the path towards the people with the expertise that Emma has. It's a kind of working I'd like to embody more. As I ask about the environmental aspect in her work, there's a similarity in how interested both are in the communication of science currently. I think in the beginning it was always there, but I think in the beginning I didn't really know what ecology meant and how principled you need to be within that. And doing the reading and discovering people like Mark Fisher, I just kind of started to find my own understanding of what ecology is and how that fits. I felt like I need something to it of drawing attention to both the kind of communication of science and the things we don't get to see, and like drawing people's attention back to what's going on around us in this like unseen mess. Like, although you may be a tiny cog in this great big machine that, you know, you're still important, just the same as a single rush, And I think that's probably why I got so into rushes, as they're unimportant, and people just hate them, and they've been historically seen as this useless, but then were also, previously, incredibly valuable. So I've always felt like a return to previous knowledge is what we need, and the only way to do that is through understanding ecology better. We talk more, about much more than I can fit here. But with each anecdote of her spontaneous learning, gathering, experimenting, it's clear Emma's work has to it a complex and rich depth. And I'm excited to see where it goes next. The Human in the Machine. On my way back down from Scotland, I learn of an exhibition in Birmingham. A collaboration between scientists and artists at the Center for Systems Modeling and Quantitative Biomedicine, at the University Medical Center Centralia in Digbeth. I see that the artist Alex Billingham is involved, and so ask to talk to her about her work for the exhibition, Anna. We connect on a cloudy day, with it coming up to the evening. My mind is cooked by the humidity and my ADHD. And I am grateful to see in Alex's catalog of work exploring the experience of neurodivergence, a thing that I am glad we can share in. I had been talking to Alex earlier in the year about work with nuclear facilities. Chiming with the research me and Morgan Jennings had done earlier in the year, it's a topic she says she keeps circling back to unwittingly, and one that for both of us fascinates with its cultural history. I was interested to know where this work with the scientific lab at Birmingham had come from. The project basically gets a whole bunch of scientists who are interested in doing sort of seed funding for various projects, with part of it being an embedded artist with that project from the inception. So I got to work with a whole bunch of scientists on robotics and neuroscience, looking at how specifically how AI and humans see the world. The project takes the form of video collage, a combinatory exploration of a three-dimensional game world and a garden park, with Alex's performances Licroclid, LED and puppetated android-esque explorer. The data feed is a learning tool, the exploration a funny, highly stimulating kind of robotic soup. I write this drinking something called Pepsi Electric, a bright blue fizzy drink. I can't help but think of how we are, as in Anna taught to reinterpret ourselves as machines. I bring up to Alex that I liked her work word soup, for how it presents the experience of neurodivergent learning as a kind of collage method. For her there is some validation in both projects. It was really nice because it was first time kind of well. Second time working with a museum collection for the first time, approaching it from a position of I don't need to be an academic research. Either way that I'm interacting with it, in the way that I'm connecting with is absolutely valid. It's just a different approach from coming in and researching all the books and then writing it to say, but it doesn't make it an invalid response to the collection. I ask where the desire to connect science and art began for her, and she looks back to childhood, and the varied life that you often end up having going into the arts. As a child, I wanted to be a scientist, but my maths wasn't good. Then when you need to do art because that's kind of where I fell into, but then 10 years out, just getting a job and, you know, paying rent, surviving, it's all there is. Still always making work, but training as a painter then, because it is that level of you can do painting in a very small scale in the stairwell. Like Emma and Kayshin, there's a wide range to the work that comes with a research-based method for Alex. I ask where that comes from. I think it's wanting to work out how to do specific things, so like, I do the soundtracks for my work. Partly because I'm after a specific kind of sound. A very 1970s sci-fi kind of soundtrack. All of these have this legal copyright on it, doing it myself. I haven't got to worry about licenses and renting out all the music, but can still have all the connotations. And it's the same with a lot of other bits. It's like you just learn how to do that and then fold it in, and usually try and get a project to pay for it. For all of her work, there is this background of the public information aspect of science, alongside what she states as nurturing an obsession with outdated hopes for the future. This phrase acts for me like a codex, seeing through the performance collage method of the work the matching of communication, the nervous excitement of ideas posed as scientific, and the energy required for survival. Yeah, I think there's something quite sweet about an outdated sort of scientific models that don't work and we know they don't work, providing obviously they're not used for abuse. I think it's very useful when looking at current thinking on science because it's that level of, yeah, this is totally how we are understanding that in 20 or 30 years' time this is going to be this ridiculous, outdated thing. It's important. I think being able to kind of have space for things not necessarily working as they should, but working enough that we survived. For Kayshin, Emma and Alex, the matters of scientific inspiration, of laboratory collaboration and artistic expression also come down to being matters, essentially, of communication. It makes sense that, with a medium like science, this becomes a predominant concern. The clarity or confusion of scientific explanation, the power that science has developed over what is considered empirical information, and how it interacts with our lived experiences of the world, is this vast, weird, scary information sector. An international interest in controlling narratives of science, for various reasons, has accompanied the colonial, capitalist violence that has led us to where we stand today. Now, staring down the climate crisis, the weapons of information are used to obscure, in my mind, the abstract, the semi-fictional, the collaged, all have an important part to play in challenging what is often the intentional use of narratives around science to enforce existing power structures. And so the work of these three artists is vital.